If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello, good evening everybody. Welcome to Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel. Tonight I am here with Andy Pye, who is a coach, well, the coach, the founder of Trail Running West Midlands, which is near where I was born and raised, Coventry, so south of Birmingham. And he runs coaching sessions and training sessions there, all to do with trail running. And he recently completed an amazing epic journey around the tops of the West Midlands. So we'll be talking about that tonight. And we'll also be talking and getting all Andy's advice for how you can train for hills in a flat place like the Midlands, because we're not all blessed with living near the mountains. So welcome, Andy. Thank you so much for joining us. What have you been up to today?
Well, thank you for having me, Claire. It's amazing to be invited to the show. Today, I've had a day off, so I've had a day with my daughter, Alyssa, and we actually had an opportunity to go to town, have some food, and just have a really good time playing around and stuff. So yeah, it's been a nice day off, and a day off training as well, so it's been good.
Cool. Oh, that's good. It's nice to have a week off from time to time. And so, first of all, I just want to find out a little bit more about the Midlands Tops epic, sort of an FKT, isn't it, that you did?
It is now. I actually created the round. So it's back in 2021. I was looking for something to do, something to create for my 40th birthday. And I decided to give something to the fell running and trail running community and create a round that they could do here that could be sort of an introduction to larger distance events such as the T round, the Bob Graham round, and a way of building your way up.
Yeah.
And also here in South Birmingham, not a lot of people are aware of how hilly the North Worcester and South Birmingham area is. So you've got the Licky Hills, you've got the Waisley Hills, and then that links up to the Clent Hills as well. So I created a route to join all the tops in a nice big loop, starting and finishing at the Licky Hills Visitor Centre.
Oh, that's nice.
And done it that way. So it's about 16 miles and 2,700 feet of climb. So it's quite a good route.
Yeah. What? So 16 miles? Or did you say 60?
Yeah, 16.
With 2,500 feet?
Yeah.
Oh, feet. That, yeah. Sorry, I thought you said metres.
No.
God.
I'm still working feet.
I've been to the wrong Birmingham.
I'm still working feet, so it's quite a tough event if you want to get around. I've had quite a few people complete the round already.
Cool.
The fastest time so far is 1 hour and 59 minutes.
Oh, wow. That's
quite amazing. I actually did it on my birthday as a recce, and I finished it in 2 hours 44.
Wow.
So I was quite pleased with that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've had quite a few people, and I actually use it as part of my training routes for my athletes who are training for bigger events and that as well.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, it's great to have a route which links up so many hills and gets a big fat number of feet or meters into the ascent there. Are you thinking of turning into a race or a yearly event or anything like that?
It's funny you say that. So I've recently taken on a new leader to help me out with my Wednesday sessions for my trail hit and run sessions that I do at the Lickey Hills, and she is also very keen to put on an event, and she did the round and said it was amazing. She wanted to actually put it on, so we're actually in the process of trying to work out how to put it on and use quite a lot of the local businesses at the same time. The Rose and Crow Public House at the bottom of Rose Hill, the Lickies, they're very keen to host it and award everyone with a local pie as a finishing gift rather than medals and stuff. So yeah, we're just working and negotiating with the councils and stuff to get permission to do the event. But yeah, it's a work in progress at the minute.
That's brilliant news, because there's quite a few trail races like down south on the coast and in the southeast in Cornwall and things like that. But you don't see a lot of trail races in the Midlands necessarily, not compared to the Lakes and the Peak District, do you?
Yeah.
So that's really good to add that one in. Oh, you'll have to let us know when it's ready, and I'll tell everybody about it. Yeah. That's brilliant. Well, congratulations on setting up that amazing route, and congratulations for having clients that can get such great times on it. It must make you feel really proud of them.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, and it's good to have the feedback that the route is good. It's difficult because it's runnable, but the views you get as well, you can at some spots you can see all the way over to Morven and the Brecon Beacons. So it does offer you really good views as well, if you just want a day out just to go around and enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds fantastic. Just over the half marathon, that sounds brilliant.
Yeah.
Good marathon training route as well then.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, great. And so you mentioned the trail hit and run sessions. Just before we go on to talk about more of the like the hill training side of things, what goes on in the trail hit and run sessions?
So most Wednesdays and Sundays, I say most because I work in the public services, so I work shifts, so I can't do every single week. I put on a 1 hour session where I try and get groups of up to 15 people out on the trails, and we do dynamic warm-ups, we do strength and conditioning specific for trail running. And then we work on the hills with a bit of speed and do the sort of things you do at a club on the tracks, but I transfer it and put it onto the trails. And the bonus of having a smaller group of only 15, I've got to coach people properly during those sessions as well. And then we do a nice cool down and everyone's ready to go home and have a good glass of wine and after enjoying what I put them through.
Yeah, I like the name hit and run, because it's high intensity interval training, isn't it? The HIIT. Yeah, so I like what you've done there.
It does have an attraction, even though it's misused quite a lot by the fitness industry. I tend to do it properly. I've read up a lot on the science application of HIIT training.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do it correctly, you can have some amazing results.
Mm. Oh, wow. And how soon would you be looking for results, say if you came to your session every week or something like that?
If people were coming every week, you'd notice changes within a month.
Wow. Yeah.
But I've had people who have been coming to me for quite a while, and at the start they were only just running 5K, and now they're running... Well, they're training for the UTMB.
That's incredible.
Have a good range. But the nice thing is, because we're on the trails, a lot of people think they'll just end up getting left behind and lost. But we go to one point, and the faster runners I send back to the people at the back, so they bring everyone together, and we all train in one place. And so it's quite a very nice environment to train in.
Yeah, it sounds very inclusive. I like that looping back idea. Like our club does that on the long, steady runs at the weekend as well.
Yeah.
And so if somebody, say, doesn't live in Birmingham and can't get to your trail hit and run classes, what kind of exercises could they do themselves, like on a Wednesday night, to do it for themselves?
So to do it for themselves, you can do a lot of body weight exercises. it's quite easy to go into the normal bilateral exercises, like squats, press-ups, push and pull exercises. But a lot of people forget that, especially with trail running, that you only really have one on the ground at one time. So you have to work unilateral exercises, lunges, step-ups, single leg calf raises, all those sort of things. And also I like to train people from doing the very basic stuff and slowly progress into the more advanced stuff rather than jumping straight into it, just so they can get the technique right first. So what I like to do is start people on very basic exercises and slowly progress. So they'll start on the zombie squats, for instance, and then they'll slowly progress to doing reverse lunges, front lunges, and things like that.
What's a zombie squat?
So a zombie squat is just doing a normal squat, but with your arms out in front of
you. Oh, okay, like this.
And yeah, but all it does is it makes sure your upper body is in a nice position rather than bending forward. You get a lot of people who squat and they bend forward as they're squatting.
Okay.
So you just make sure their technique is right before they progress onto anything else.
Oh, okay. And you used a very posh word there earlier, which was unilateral. And while you were talking, I've actually worked out what you meant, which was one leg, is that right?
Yeah.
Like, or one side of the body?
Yeah, she is one side at a time.
Yeah.
So bilateral is both legs.
Oh, yeah.
Unilateral is one leg.
It's funny that you say that, well, not funny, but it's interesting that you said that, because a couple of weeks ago we had Carla Molinaro on, the jog world record holder for the ladies, and she was saying that because running is such a, it's basically jumping from one leg to the other, it's really important to do one-legged workouts, so
definitely.
It sounds like, your classes would be really beneficial. I suppose, like, do you start people off with just really simple things like standing on one leg or one-legged squats and things like that?
So I do a lot of that in the warm-ups. So with the warm-ups, we'll do very dynamic stuff, working mobility, hopping on one leg, pogo jumps where you're jumping up and down on both legs. And then I'll slowly progress into jumping up and down on one leg, just to create a bit more strength in the Achilles. And in the calves, and then we just slowly progress the mobility, doing bear crawls and stretching T-spine stretches and things like that, just so the body's ready to do all the movements that you'd expect, especially running downhill, because people they love training uphill but they don't train downhill as much as they should.
Oh, that's interesting, because I've put on the thumbnail to this broadcast, I've put how to train for uphill, well, hills. Actually, I just put hills, but by that, I thought uphill. So that's really interesting that you said that. So we'll have to cover a bit of the downhills as well, seeing as you said
definitely.
That. Yeah. Okay. Oh, well, that's good. Well, I think people have got enough information there, hopefully, to do a little HIIT session of their own. But obviously, it's just much more fun if you go in a group, isn't it? Like, that all just sounded like really fun, doing the bear crawls and things. And like laughing at other people doing the zombie and stuff. Your classes sound really fun, so I really would urge anybody who lives anywhere near the Lickey Hills to give them a go. And they sound really inclusive as well, so that's a massive bonus. If anybody was feeling a bit not that confident about going, then they should just turn up, shouldn't they?
Definitely. Yeah. We're very welcoming as well. Everyone's very friendly, but everyone gets introduced to the whole group at the start, and they just talk all the time.
Is it like Alcoholics Anonymous? Hi, my name's so-and-so and I'm a trail runner. Well, that sounds really good. Next time I'm in the area, I'll have to see if I can come along to one.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's just move on to the hills now then, because obviously you've created this really hilly route for people to train for more exciting like rounds and races. And you've got somebody training like that came to you doing a 5K, and then now they want to do the UTMB, the Ultra Tour de Mont Blanc, like over 100 miles through the mountains, and presumably they live near you. How on earth do you get to, how on earth do people train for the mountains in a normal non-mountainous place? It's a big question. What do you do to start with?
you start with the conditioning phase, and along with a lot of coaching, you'll periodize, you'll do periodization blocks. And it's all about having patience with your athletes as well, which is something I definitely learnt over lockdown and having a newborn at the same time.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll condition people depending on their current fitness and the event that they're training for. And especially somewhere like the Lickey Hills and the Wazy Hills, it's about looking around and seeing what sort of ground and hills are suitable to train on. So for instance, yesterday I was doing a session for myself based on Kenyan hill nets, where you have a route which has an uphill and a downhill in two flat sections.
Okay. So
it's a bit like having a sloped 400 meter track and just running loops for a certain amount of time. And then at the end of that time, you have a recovery and then go again.
Okay.
It's a really good way of conditioning to run up flat and down. A lot of cross country runners will do those. A lot of fell runners will do that as well, and mountain runners. It's also picking the sort of terrain that the event is going to replicate as well. So for instance, at the Licker Hills, we're quite lucky because we've got some really steep banks which I can do sprinting tours on.
Yeah, I've been to the Licky Hills before. It's really steep, but it's not very long, is it? It's like the height of a house, but really, like, nearly a 40, it seems like a 45 degree angle. It's probably but it's
so
really steep.
You've got the Licky Hill golf course, and there's some banks off the golf course which I'd probably say only less than 75 metres in length, but you can really work some good power intervals on there. But then you've got, if you move across to Waisley Hills, then you've got some longer hills that you can work the longer intervals on. If you're in the cities, I do encourage my athletes to try and find multi-storey car parks which are safe, sets of stairs which you can just run up and down, because the conditioning is so good, and it's just a way of getting the legs and body used to the movements of running uphill.
I know a man who trained for the Bob Graham Round. He used to work in London and Manchester, and Manchester's quite flat actually, and he used to train, he found like these multi-story car parks with like five floors or something. He just used to run up and down, up and down. And he said that that was actually really good training mentally as well, because wherever he was going to race was much better views than that, so he knew that he could do it.
Well, I've actually got one of my clients at the moment who's doing the Llangollen 50-mile event in June. And at the bottom of Beacon Hill, there's a private, it's owned by Worcestershire National Trust. It's called Beacon Wood, and the track around it is literally just 1 mile. And there's about 500 feet of climb if you do that full loop. And what I do is, especially to test their mentality as well, is just get them doing loops and loops and loops around that for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Oh.
And it really it really conditions them. And I'm sure you know what it's like on an ultra. It's a mental challenge as well as a physical challenge. So it will challenge them in both ways. It's preparing them, their mind and their body at the same time.
So is that a bit like the Kenyan hill reps? They do a loop of up and a down?
Yeah, so it'll go up, it'll loop back down, and then come back up again.
Yeah.
But it's quite a long loop, so they'll just, they'll hike bits of it, they'll run bits of it, and it really helps them practice their pacing for ultra training as well.
And you know, like if you were to do Kenyan hills, are you supposed to sprint up the hill and sprint down the hill and rest on the flat bits, or are you supposed to do the whole thing at a relatively even pace?
The whole thing at a relatively even, hard pace.
Oh,
so,
okay.
A lot of people use heart rate monitors. I tend to prefer to use rate of perceived exertion.
Yeah.
And I'd like to be sort of 8-9 on that as you're doing the reps. And then you should see your recovery drop right back down a good minute or two, depending on the time that you're doing the repetitions for, and then going again. But the effort is exactly the same up, across and down.
Oh, okay. It sounds like hard work. I don't think I'm going to train with you. It's too much like hard work.
I'm not that hard, I promise.
That's cool. So I think I cut you off mid-flow. I think you were about to say loads of other tips as well for training. You mentioned the terrain as well, like seeking out terrain, like not running on the roads all the time, presumably.
Yeah definitely. So for instance, I'm doing the Snowdon International Fell Race in July, sorry, and there are parts of the Lickies that are quite rocky. So I'll use those areas to train on.
Would you go sort of back and forth on those rocky areas then? Like reps of rocks, basically?
Basically. Because you've got to condition the ankles, you've got to condition the knees, because your body's going to be set off in all different directions. And that's where a lot of core work comes into it as well. You've really got to work the core, but not sit-ups sort of crunches, because that's just working your obliques. It's all about anti-rotational exercises, like the pal-off hold, side planks, the bird dog, Kip aeroplane, those sort of exercises, which everyone can do at home and we know Kip, which is really, really good for your core stability as well. Again, if you're training for something like over in Europe and you're definitely not going to be able to get over there, it's about having a good idea of what the terrain's going to be like and trying to replicate that at your home location to see if you can mimic what you're going to be coming up against.
And what about the weather? Sorry, like maybe you're going to do something really hot or really cold. Is that something you would also replicate during the hill training here? Wear loads of clothes or something, or is that something you don't need to worry about as much?
So I've recently done the USCA Ultra coaching course, which is done by Jason Coop, and he's based over in America.
Oh yeah.
And one of the things he suggests is sauna training.
Oh right.
So it's about doing your training and then diving into a sauna for about 30 minutes straight after.
Oh god, that sounds like my idea of hell. Like, where's the ice bath gone?
In all fairness, I did read it and I was like, okay, fair enough. But he also says that you don't necessarily have to train for that. If you can get to the location a week or 2 weeks before your actual event, then you can acclimatise to the heat while you're over there instead.
Yeah, yeah. It is, I've done the Coastal Challenge. Well, I didn't do all of it, but the Coastal Challenge in Costa Rica, and the heat was terrifying on the first day. But then by the second day and the third day and the fourth day, you do kind of get used to it, and you just have to run really slowly. I thought that I was going to be last on the first day. I probably was.
They actually recommend that your body will probably adapt to the conditions within 72 hours.
Yeah.
With the amount it sweats and everything. So as long as you can replace that with the electrolytes and things, then you should be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Eat lots, sleep well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And is there anything else that people should be doing? You did mention training for downhills as well. I'm quite interested in that because no one really talks about that.
No. So we all know that when you're doing an event in the mountains, you're not just going to be climbing, you're going to be running downhill at the same time. They've proven scientifically that as you're running downhill, you're probably putting about 7 times your body weight through your legs. So you need to replicate that, otherwise you're going to end up with jelly legs as you get to the bottom of the hills, which then can then increase the risk of getting an injury. So there's a lot of, that's why a lot of the time you'll do single leg exercises, Bulgarian split squats, calf raises, things like that. And running downhill, you need to practice the descending as much as you do the uphills, because you need to be able to judge where your footing's going to go, pick your route as you're going downhill. As you know, fell running, we don't particularly run on the tracks, we all just run anywhere. So it's about picking that line and going down as fast as you can, but control your fall at the same time. It's controlled falling. And just having a good footing. Running on the roads, running uphill, they'll talk about running on your toes or midfoot as much as you can. Whereas running downhill, I always suggest people getting as much of the foot on the ground as possible, so they've got a nice stable platform on every single foot strike that they do.
Yeah. And would you recommend that people do, like with the hill sessions and also the downhill sessions, should they do a certain amount of time or a certain amount of reps? Like, it must depend on their fitness level and experience, mustn't it?
Yeah.
How do you sort of gauge where you are and decide how to do it?
So a lot of the time when I'm, especially when I'm taking on one-to-one athletes, I'll discuss how fit they are. I am sometimes, and when they're living close to me, I'll do some fitness assessments with them as well. I like to do the 30-15 intermittent fitness test, which is a bit like the bleep test, but it's set over 40 meters and it's running backwards and forwards for 30 seconds, 15 seconds rest, and it gets faster and faster and faster. So it's a nice way of without having to go into a laboratory of being able to assess someone via two mats. And then you can start working on the sort of reps that they do. So for instance, I'll always start with conditioning people with Kenyan hill reps. And you can start with as little as 1 minute, work up to 5. You get some Olympians that are doing 30-minute Kenyan hill reps.
Wow.
To get fit. But then it's also working on the long hill reps and that, and you just slowly increase the time that they're doing those reps. and they'll condition over time, but also making sure that they have their rest periods as well.
Yeah.
Heart rate down and let the muscles recover, ready so they're almost fresh for the next repetition as well.
Yeah. So you just, if you're starting off doing anything like this, just do a few to start with, or a small amount of time to start with, of either Kenyan hill reps or some just up and down hill reps. And then how often would you recommend doing a session like that, like during the week? Like, would you do it once or twice a week, or?
So a hard session like that, I would probably do once a week. You're probably going to be doing a long run at the end of the week where you'll be going over hilly terrain anyway, but a specific session on that probably be done once a week, because you've got to allow your body to recover. And you're going to have other things that you're going to be training for during that week as well. So I'd probably put a hard session like that in once a week.
I do actually like hill training. Like I do do it like most Thursdays, and it is quite fun because rather than just plodding around, you've got an idea in your mind, haven't you? You can tick them off as you go. I usually do like 6 times 60 seconds just of a hill near my house. And that's enough, you know, like I'm just getting back into things. So, just can't be too hard on yourself.
No. Well, I also do tell people to listen to their bodies as well. Sometimes, for instance, with my clients, I'll tell them that today's session's 8 repetitions. But if you get to 4, 5 or 6 and your body's saying, no, I've had enough of this, then that's fine. Because you're not going to lose anything by doing an extra 2 repetitions. You've already gained quite a bit. So it's always good to listen to your body and not push it beyond what you're capable of at that time. You may be tired. You may have had a bad night's sleep. You may have had a difficult day with the children, a difficult day at work. So I always suggest listening to your body and just not pushing past what you should do.
Yeah, it's difficult though, isn't it? Because like, how do you know when you're being lazy? Like last week I forced myself to do a lot of exercise. It was quite a hard week. And then on Saturday I was just completely battered. So this week I've eased off a bit. And I do feel lazy. Like I didn't do my strength and conditioning class this morning. I went to bed for an hour actually after dropping Finley at nursery. I just went to bed for an hour.
Yeah.
And I felt better for it, but I also feel guilty for missing the session.
but what you can do there is your next strength and conditioning session, you just put more effort into that, and you're not going to lose anything by dropping one session every now and again.
Okay, that's okay then. Maybe I'll do a little jog tomorrow. I did dance for Finley as I fed him this evening. So me and Steve, he's got this little truck thing, and it just says, it does like various tunes, like the can-can. So me and Steve were can-canning, and Finley was just looking at us going, what is mummy and daddy doing? Dancing and stuff is a good way of, like, if you can try and incorporate some of the twists and the lunges and stuff into dancing,
definitely.
Then it's got to be good, hasn't it? And I wanted, I'm going to read out a couple of things on the live chat in a minute, but I just wanted to ask you a bit about poles, because poles feature quite a lot in races like the UTMB and some of the longer distance ultras. And I just wondered what your views or your advice was on training with poles. How would you recommend people go about incorporating poles into their hill training?
So when I started out into fell running, obviously fell runners don't use poles.
Cheating sticks.
cheating sticks. However, as I've gained more experience as a coach, I've learned that they're a very valuable tool, because they can reduce your effort level by at least 30%, so you're actually saving quite a bit of energy. What I will say to athletes that want to use poles is make sure you get a good set of poles. I know Harrier.com, they do some really good poles that are very affordable as well, and train with them. It's the same as carrying your kit. If you're training for an event where you've got to carry a load of kit, get the kit, pack your bag, put it on your back and train with it, because if you only leave it to the day of the race, then it's going to be a massive shock to the system. Whereas you can actually get out there and train with them and get used to using them, then it'll give you a lot more advantage when you actually come to race day.
They're really useful, aren't they? We've actually got a polls review that I'll link to. It should pop up just over there if I remember to do that at 27:39. I'll make a note. And Yeah, and the Harrier poles are really good as well. They are only £70 for the pair still of the Helvellyn Carbon Z poles. So definitely get your hands on a pair of them. They're really good starter pair of poles. But yeah, I used to think that poles weren't useful at all, and now I'm totally converted like you. So
yeah,
yeah, they're definitely useful for the long races. I just wanted to just ask you a little bit about the motivation as well. Like, how do you get motivated to do things like, you know, like the strength and conditioning and balance moves that you've talked about here tonight that will make people better at uphills? And how do you get the motivation to do a hill session as well, like up and down? How would you suggest?
I think the motivation comes from entering the event in the first place. I think once you know that you're training for something that's hard, then you know you've got to put the extra effort in. When I entered the Snowdonia 50 back in 2019, I knew that I was covering 50 to 55 miles, 16,500 feet. I couldn't get to Wales every weekend, and I'd have to just motivate myself to get out there, do the training, and get myself as fit as possible. Plus, being ex-parachute regiment, I didn't want to fail. you don't like to fail when you've been in a regiment like that. So the motivation was there. I wanted to make my wife proud. I was raising money for Save the Children, so people had donated. And I think it's just things like that. They just keep you headstrong. And on that event, I did have some very, very low moments, and a couple of moments I thought, oh, I'm just going to suck it off. And my wife was calling me, I had some friends text me as well, and it just motivates you to keep going. And that's the same in the training. You just know that you've got to put your body through it, because if you don't, you're just not going to complete the event.
Yeah, and you've got to ask yourself, like, it's short-term pain, isn't it? Well, unless you've got an injury or something like that. I would not advise anyone to run through an injury, but yeah, it's a short-term pain, and it's all character building.
Yes, which is, again, you know, whatever the weather, you just got to get out there. The moment you step out and you start, then jobs are good, and you're just going to crack on, because whether it's wet, whether it's hot, you've got to do the session, and that will also train you for the conditions on the day, because you don't know what conditions you're going to be racing in. So just get out there and do it.
And do it, yeah. And so that's when it must come in really handy to have a coach like you, like somebody, you're accountable for something, you've got a training plan, you know exactly, you're not deciding yourself, oh, should I do this or should I do that?
So
Can you tell me a bit more about how people would contact you for coaching and how it works with you?
Yeah. So I've got a website, Trail One West Midlands. I'm on Facebook and Instagram as well. And there's a form on my website which people can fill out, or they can message me direct. And then what I do is I send them an email with pre-coaching questionnaire, just to get an idea of what they've been up to, where they are now, what the event is, what their races are between then and now. So I can actually assess also whether they're in the right mind of the right mindset before they start, so they can so I know how much work I've got to do with them. A coach makes them accountable, as you said, but it's also there for support, and not just for the sessions. They can contact you any time of the day, WhatsApp, phone calls at least once a month, just to talk through how their training has been, how they are themselves, and whether they're enjoying it, having a bad time. And you end up with some of your clients getting quite a good relationship, a good working relationship. The my one client that I'm training for the UTMB, I've been with her for 4 years, and she just absolutely loves it. We're actually really good friends now since we've started. So yeah, it's it gives you more support than just following training plan out of a book or a magazine. And
personalised.
It's very much personalised. So I'll do a 4 week block for most people, 5 weeks sometime, depending on their fitness. And during their recovery week, I'll then contact them if they haven't contacted me in between, and we'll discuss the next training block, what's the expectation, what they're going to be doing, they let me know also their commitments during the next month, whether they've got weddings to go to, hen do's, stag do's, what their work commitments are. And I can work it around there. I've got one client who, like me, has worked shifts, but it's a 10-day shift pattern. And doing a 7-day training week when you actually work a 10-day shift plan, it can be quite difficult.
Yeah.
So I do a 10-day training plan and work it that way. So it makes it more easy for them to get all their training into those 10 days.
Yeah, that's very wise. And some people work on a 10-day training plan anyway. Like, I've heard that 7 days is like a bit much for some types of training. So I think I'm sure Marcus Scottney at one point told me about that, and saying that was an advantage sometimes. And and I'm interested to know, Andy, do you have a coach yourself, or do you coach yourself with the knowledge that you've got?
I coach myself, but I have so there's two people who tutored me when I first became a coach, Graham Woodward and Steve Pearson, and they mentor me now. So although I coach myself, if I've got an event coming up, I will always contact them and get their guidance, so I can aim to go in the right direction myself. And if I'm having a bit of a difficult time, or things aren't working out, then I'll contact them and they'll help me out. So yeah, again, two very good friends who are, you know, mentoring me to become better at what I'm doing, and coaching myself as well.
Cool. Oh, that's fantastic. It sounds dreamy. I just want to read you a few of the comments, just so that you can see that people are watching and enjoying. So Antonio Cardinelli says, hello. Nice.
Hi.
And simple. Hannah Basie says, good evening. I live in a hilly area just south of Sheffield, but always keen to hear recommendations of hill sessions. So hopefully the Kenyan Hills is a nice one for you, Hannah. we've got Philippe Pinaud. He says, great to see Andy here. I have been training with him for the last 5 months and his plans are great. So there you go.
There you go. Not bad, is it?
What better accolade can you get than that? Susie Dand says, as a Londoner, I'm finding this all very helpful. And Philippe also mentioned that he's a big fan of the Kenyan Hills. He says they're hard but enjoyable. I can imagine.
Good.
And Richard Greaves says, this is great. He's a fellow Brummie, and he's going to his first Sky Run in the coming month. So
yeah.
He says he feels like he's been doing some of the right training. So you've made him feel better there. Do you get many clients doing Sky races as well?
So not at the moment. The people I train are doing various different things. I've got two that do a lot of obstacle course racing.
Wow.
One of them he's in his 50s and has actually gotten to the podium for his age group for the Spartan Race trilogy. So that's something I've been quite proud to help him achieve. But I've also, that there's a guy who lives nearby who's being coached by Damien Hall. He's actually used my round, the Midland Tops round, as part of his training for the Paddy Buckley round, which he's doing this summer. So we're in contact quite a bit, and he does tell me a bit about the training he's doing and stuff. So yeah, it's nice that he's actually using stuff that I've put out there to help with his training.
Yeah, that's great. Oh, that's fantastic. Where can people find the route of that round if they want to do it themselves? I know you've got it on Strava.
It's on my website.
Oh, okay.
I've tried to keep it as traditional as possible by doing grid references and start and finishes at Licky Hills, because I want to try and encourage people to explore it, find their own routes rather than just follow GPX. However, it is on my Strava as well, if people just want to download it and have a go. You'll also find it on fastestknowntime.com. Because waiting for someone to do a very fast time and get around.
Yeah, I've just flicked up the Midlands Tops Strava that you sent to me, and it does look epic. It sort of looks like a mountain race. If you didn't know it was in the Midlands, you'd just think it was in the Pyrenees or something.
there is one road. I think it's Windward Heath Road, which you have to go down and then come back up. And it's a 16% gradient on the way back up, which is, and it's half a mile long. So
wow.
certainly shocks the legs on the way back.
Yeah, that is definitely good training. It sounds like a great route. Like, I have to come and do it sometime. It's not that far away.
I do upset people, though, because Coughton Hill, which is the final checkpoint before they finish, actually takes you past your car if you've parked in the car park.
Oh, no.
I have done that on purpose.
That is so funny. Oh, that's brilliant. I think that's great. I just think it's amazing how you're opening up, like, you're opening up the trails of South Birmingham area and, like, the Midlands area, but also you're using those trails for people to kind of springboard and go further afield and do even more mountainous things. So it's just fantastic.
I think there's a lot of people out there who road run and want to go off-road, but are just worried about taking that step. And what I'm trying to do, especially in the West Midlands, is help people take that step forward and gain their confidence so they can go off and do their own adventures, or even have me coach them to do their own adventures. But the main reason that I've started all this off is so I can try and encourage people to get off the road and go onto the trails. And now I'm helping people from going off the trails onto the fells by doing a few workshops over the Church Strip as well.
Ah, brilliant. Oh, that sounds great. Was there anything else that you wanted to just impart to people about hill training up or down? Or have we said everything that you wanted to say tonight?
I think that one of the main things is just enjoy yourself. Trail running is not about wearing a chest strap, following your heart rate and running a certain time. It's about just running a route, enjoying the views and just having a bit of an adrenaline rush, especially on the downhills, putting the hard work in on the uphills, but just generally having a good time doing an activity that everyone enjoys.
Fantastic. That's wise words and great advice. I just want to say thank you so much, Andy, for coming on tonight and sharing all your pearls of wisdom about hill running and training for hills in a place that's not super, super mountainous or even quite flat. It's been really, really helpful, and I'm sure that loads of people listening that live in cities and areas like South Birmingham will be taking your advice on board, and some of the people that live around Birmingham area hopefully will turn up at your trail classes. Oh, what was the name again? It was a great name.
Trail hit and run,
that's it. Yeah, that sounds brilliant. Thank you so much, Andy, and I will see you on the trails.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you.
Cool. Good night, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.